Welcome to the Behind the Bra podcast, brought to you by Barbells for Boobs, where we are redefining the standard of care in breast health and improving the quality of life post-diagnosis. I'm your host, Ziana Hansen, and the founder of this incredible organization. Thank you for joining us. Today, we have Robin Galley, a thriver, mother, physical therapist, and I'm just going to say it, Robin, a competitive athlete.
I'll take it. I've been called worse.
Yes! No! Take it. Own it.
I'll take it. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
This is so exciting. I've known Robin for some time, so I'm really excited for the world to get to know her and for her to share her story. So she's got a pretty incredible one. So I'm excited for this for the show today.
Yes, me too.
All right. So I'm going to start with the same question everyone should know. Drum roll, please. Robin, who are you?
Oh, God. You said this was only an hour, though, right? Who am I? Gosh. Well, I am a lot of things, and rightfully so. I have changed over the course of my time here on the earth as with life lessons and things that have molded me into, where I am today, including obviously breast cancer. But you know, I'm a mom, to wonderful children. My seventh grade son and my fourth grade daughter, Blake and Clara. And I am a physical therapist. I have worked for about 20 years in outpatient orthopedics and spent the last 12 years. I transitioned over into oncology. And then after my diagnosis, became certified in lymphedema. So I've been working with oncology patients for a long time as well. And then I am a professor at Nova Southeastern University's PT program. So I teach in that program as well. And I consider myself an athlete. I was a competitive gymnast. I competed at LSU. Go Tigers.
Yeah.
Or Carla, go Tigers.
Carla in here is also from LSU. So she's over there like pumping her fist.
Nice. And I bleed purple and gold. So
yes, I have a purple hat that says LSU.
Yay, perfect. So I did gymnastics there. And then I found CrossFit. Ironically, I was treating a patient that had been injured at CrossFit, and they started talking to me about what it was. And I wanted to give it a try, because the truth is, once gymnastics ended, I didn't really have anything that gave me that same satisfaction that gymnastics did, and that gave me that full body workout. And then so I tested out one of the local gyms here, or boxes, and fell in love. And the next thing I know, I was swept into the competitive side of it, and it became very big part of my life, and still is.
So where did you grow up, and how did you get into gymnastics?
So I'm an Air Force brat. I've lived in 15 different states before I went to college. So I used to tell people I'm a part hick, part Yankee. I'm like a hickey. but the truth is, I've lived everywhere, in a lot of different places. And it was, I started at a youth center on one of the Air Force bases, just doing like tap, jazz, ballet. And then across the hallway was a little room that had a couple panel mats and a wooden beam. And I started doing gymnastics over there. And then when we moved to upstate New York, my coach at the youth center said, you should take it more seriously and find a real gym. And I did. And, so what about age 10, I started in gymnastics. And to be honest with you, moving around as much as we did, it honestly really helped keep me out of trouble, I think. Being so involved in gymnastics, it was more important to me to be prepared for a gymnastics meet than it was to go to a school dance or things like that. Not that I didn't enjoy those things too, but I would say that I did miss out on some things, but I wouldn't have changed it. Gymnastics did a lot for me. And helped shape who I am, and it fed my competitive nature as well. So it was really good. And then I went on a recruiting trip to LSU and fell in love with the whole Cajun culture and Cajun food, and even married a Cajun. And and then I went from there.
Carla's literally drooling over here. She's like, when you said Cajun food, she's like, yes.
Oh yeah. Jambalaya, etouffee. I think my daughter's first solid food was jambalaya.
So awesome. So for me, I think that even just sports and athleticism for women is something really kind of just happening now, right? And so I think that what you said was like how gymnastics actually built you to who you are today, right? And so I really, as people are listening to this, like how important it is that we're getting young girls in a sport, in activity to, number one, okay, sorry, you might miss a dance or two, but man, I mean, if it's going to project who you're going to be as a grown woman, like put your girls in something, ladies. You know, I was one of 10 kids. And so by the time it got to me, it was usually my dad was like, oh, I don't have any money for you. So you can like sit on the sidelines. And so that's, I think it's such a great message. And I love that you started so young and that you speak highly of it still. Cause a lot of people, when you start so young, sometimes it becomes like just, you know, it doesn't end up being something positive. So,
yeah, you know, it was something that I loved doing. It brought me a lot of happiness. It was also, you know, every gym I ever went to, one of the most important things, gymnastics is very much about perfectionism. And that can be both a good thing and a bad thing, depending on what you're doing. But they also, it translates over into academics. I don't know a lot of gymnasts that are not also good students. And every gym I was ever a part of, it was part of it that you had to bring in your report cards every quarter, and you would have to do extra conditioning if your grades dropped, or they would, you know, sit you out on a competition if your grades dropped to a certain level. And so they really instilled that into who I was, the importance of academics, and even into at LSU. One of the reasons I chose LSU was the coach, Dee Dee Brough, long live the queen. She basically said, you know, one of the most important things to me is that we have the highest team GPA of all the sports every year. That's one of the things she really took a lot of pride in. And she liked to recruit in part based on academics and who were stronger in that way. So I really, you know, enjoyed that. And I ended up, you know, it translated into everything that I did. So I'm really grateful for that.
Well, the discipline, you know, I feel like the discipline of the sport is really probably the most important value, and especially in gymnastics.
I mean, 100%, 100%.
Yeah. And I have a friend that's a coach. He coaches college basketball, and he told me, I love when a coach can have this mindset, especially at the collegiate level, is he's like, my job is I'm an educator. He's like, my only job is to get my athletes to graduate college. Like, that's all he thinks about. And I'm like, that's such a great way of thinking as a coach, of you're in charge of their education. You know, you're kind of that pillar to make sure that they perform well as students, which is a really great, great mindset.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to be honest, as a CrossFitter, I'm a little jealous of people like you. You come into the gym, you've been doing gymnastics your whole life, and you're like, oh, a kipping pull up like this. So let's talk about how that, you know, like going into CrossFit, what did that look like? What did that feel like? How long have you been CrossFitting? And how did it for you get you back into that gym? And how long were you away from gymnastics, and how did it kind of bring you back into that sport?
So, one of my good friends and former teammates at LSU, Ida Canovas Keplinger, she is, she's gone to the games now for 4 years, and she's a master's athlete. And she is the one that convinced me to give it a try. She, along with one of my other teammates, Amy McCloskey, both of them encouraged me to try it and give it a go. They're like, listen, it's like being able to do gymnastics all over again. It's like a way to, you know, get back in there. And when I went in there, you know, the things initially that I was, well, that I've always been good at were anything that were body weight, you know, handstand pushups. I was like, yeah, okay. When they said kipping handstand pushups, I thought, how the hell do you kip a handstand pushup? Like, I, you know, they don't, same with, and honestly, same with pull-ups. I had never done a kipping pull-up. I just pulled up, you know, that was just what we did. And we didn't do them that way. So that was actually something I had to learn a little bit, but I have done the kipping motion for many other skills on the bars. So it did come really naturally. And to this day, it's, you know, even after everything I went through with all my surgeries and procedures, you know, pull-ups are still one of my best movements. And it's something that came more naturally, and it was definitely a great transition. I think one of the advantages that gymnasts have going into CrossFit is they have body awareness. They know where they are in space. So for me, that translated over into getting into Olympic lifting, for example, to me is very similar to learning gymnastics, because it's muscle memory and it's technique way more than it is just pure strength. It's, you know, I know people that can, they're way stronger than me, but I lift more than them due to a strength, or vice versa, or, you know, due to my a technique. So I think it really comes down to just understanding movement patterns and understanding your own body and where it is in space that makes a huge difference. And that's where gymnasts have the advantage. However, we don't have the advantage when it comes to running or wall balls or rowing. All those short people. Yeah. Those short people things. Yeah. Those don't, we don't do well with those, but burpees we're pretty good at.
Yeah. I agree. Cause I was a dancer, you know, I went to college for dance, and that's, you know, I'm more into weightlifting than anything right now. And it reminds me of dance. It literally is just, it's repetition, it's consistency. And then, you know, at the end, when you're done with rehearsals, you go on stage and you perform, which you do in weightlifting, you know, and people are like, aren't you so scared to like go out on stage? And I'm like, I've been doing this my whole life. Like, you go out and perform. Yeah. So it's been, I agree with you that it's very much about body awareness, right? So as long as you have that, you're going to succeed in CrossFit.
And I didn't start CrossFit until I was 35. So I had been, you know, it'd been a good 13, 14 years since I'd done gymnastics per se. And I think it was really exciting for me to remember what it felt like to be upside down. I mean, I kind of felt like a kid again, walking into the CrossFit gym, and then we're going to handstand walk. And I was like, we're going to what? You know, I thought those days were just over. And so, you know, being 35 and a mother of two, and you know, learning that, hey, I can teach an old body new tricks again. And it was just a great feeling. And I think that's what really drew me to it, where the adrenaline kicked in. And it made me, I was at a time in my life where I think I was really going down this dark pathway of depression, really. And it pulled me out of it. It pulled me. I started feeling good about myself again. I started having something that I really looked forward to and was excited about. And that was a really cool thing. And I needed it. It came into my life at a time when I was really, really in need. And it was a good thing.
Yeah. I always say that CrossFit has done more for me internally than it has externally. Right. So it's like, absolutely, you get in shape, you look good. But what it did for me mentally and emotionally, and just the confidence that it brought to me. And again, I think at that really critical time, because I think I call CrossFit recess, you know, right? It reminds me of like it's recess again. I get to go out and play with my friends, and I just have to pay for it. You have to pay for recess.
Not to mention all the cool people we meet, right, Z?
Yes, exactly. So I know that like you finding finding out about breast cancer, we have a really significant story as it pertains to Barbells for Boobs. So walk us through kind of what your life looked like the day before your diagnosis.
So, I will just give you the rundown. It was Christmas Eve of 2015. And I had just done the 12 days of Christmas WOD, which is one of my favorite things to do. And it was a tough one. There were some ring muscle ups in there and some heavy lifting. So it was a tough one. I was pretty beat up and came home, got into the shower, and was just washing my body, and reached across under one arm, and my finger just grazed over a lump on the side of my chest on my left breast. And I remember going, what? That wasn't there yesterday. You know, I mean, it wasn't, so I wasn't doing a breast exam. I wasn't doing, you know, I just, I noticed it, and I knew enough because I'd been working with breast cancer patients, ironically, and because I teach on it and everything, that I was like, it's not painful. It's odd shaped. It wasn't there yesterday. So whatever this is came on fast, and it's growing fast. And, I was like, and it's, you know, and it's not, movable, you know, it wasn't a cyst, and I knew enough to know. But at the same time, I was also like, girl, you are the healthiest you've ever been. You've never smoked a day in your life. You eat 100% paleo. You're, you know, I mean, I was in the, I was in great shape. And so I just kept telling myself, you know what? It's nothing. It's going to be whatever it is. It's going to be some benign tumor, whatever. And it'll probably either go away or they'll just remove it, whatever. Not worried even a little bit. And then, however, I was worried enough to know that whatever it is, it came on fast. And so I knew that it needed to be addressed before it was a big deal. So I, it was Christmas Eve, so everything's closed. So the first day, I think it was 2 days because Christmas was on a Saturday. So it was like 2 days later. I was able to get in, or I walked to, they said they had no appointments. So I just showed up first thing in the morning at my primary care's office. And it was at the end of the year. And I said, I walked to, they said, do you have an appointment? I said, no, I don't. And they said, okay, you can come back in 2 weeks. And I said, well, no, I need to see someone today. And we went back and forth at the front desk a few times. She said, there's only one person here. And look, we have a room full of people because everyone was trying to get in before their deductibles, you know, started over again. And so I stood there and I said, no, all I need is a referral for a mammogram and an ultrasound. And she was like, oh, is there something wrong? And I said, yes. And very loudly in front of the entire thing, I said, I have a lump on my breast and I want to make sure it's not cancer.
Boom.
And everyone was just like, everyone got really quiet. And she goes, okay, ma'am, have a seat. And next thing I know, literally it was a beeline to the front. The doctor came back, who happened to have been one of my patients. I treated her for back pain as a physical therapist. So it worked out well. She came back, she brings me in. And I remember she brought me back and I laid on the table and put my arm over my head. And she says, and I mean this with no disrespect, but this is sort of funny the way she said it. She was an Indian doctor. And she said, oh my goodness, I can see it from here. And I said, yeah, I know. And again, to put it as bluntly as possible, which I don't really have any, I'm not embarrassed by things. I was a proud member of the Itty Bitty Titty Committee. And
I was like, where are you going with this?
And yeah, so it was like, it was very easy to see because there was not much else going on there. And so anyway, we got in for she got in for all the testing, and essentially everything comes back very, you know, politically written without giving you any answers, like suspicious of possible, you know, something wrong, you know, without using the word cancer on any of this stuff, you know, recommend further follow-up. So I ended up going into about 3 days later, I got into the breast center at Moffitt where I happen to work. And I was there all day. I had no idea. In retrospect, I should have brought a friend because that's when things started getting scary because they kept calling me back in for another view. They brought me in for about 4 mammograms, one after the other. They kept, you know, going in and they're squeezing me and they had to break out the itty bitty paddles because... That's all I had.
And do they really have special tools for the itty bitties?
They literally did. See, it was so embarrassing. They're like, oh no, this isn't gonna work. They take them off and they put these two things that look like little spatulas. I was like, okay.
You're like, thanks.
I was like, yep, that looks more like it. So it's all good. And they went through it and then they said, we're gonna do an ultrasound. So they did an ultrasound, and then at the end they come back, and I've been there now for 6 hours. Like, they kept calling me back and then putting me back in the waiting room. And then they said, okay, we found, 2 tumors in your breast and something in a lymph node in your arm, in your underarm. And I went, oh, and they said, so we're going to do a biopsy. And I said, okay. And I said, when is that? And they said, right now. And I was like,
oh, wow.
Oh. So then I went into another room and they did this thing. I call it hungry, hungry hippo. I don't know if you remember that game, but I was looking at they were sticking the thing in the needle in, and you look on a screen, it looks like hungry, hungry hippo trying to grab a piece of the tumor.
Yes.
And they like clipped all that. And then they said, okay. They said, we will call you. And they made me sign something that said it's okay to tell me if it's over the phone, you know, no matter what it is, that they can give me the news over the phone. So I had to sign off on that. And then it was probably a week later that I was at work and I got the call while I was sitting at my desk. And she said, it is cancer, and it's, you have, all 3 came back malignant. And she said, you know, this is, it's, we think it's estrogen positive. It's this, you know, she started going on. So I put on my clinical head and I just listened to her and I said, okay, so what do we need to do? And I'm writing down, she said, we're going to start with chemo with you because it's in the lymph node, but we have to get scans because once it's in the lymph node, it could be anywhere else. So we need to scan your whole body and check, you know, for wherever else it could be. So we went through all this stuff and I was very just, I went business minded and I said, okay, okay. And
then right on that call?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
like wow. Completely, the emotion hadn't hit me yet. And then I hang up the phone and I got up from my desk and I walked to the bathroom and I had texted my boss who was in the faculty meeting. And I told her, oh, I have my doc. She was the only one that knew that I had just had this procedure. And I was waiting for a call. I said, my doctor's calling me. I'll be a little late to the faculty meeting. And she said, okay, no problem. So I texted her and said, it's cancer. And that's all I said. And I went to the bathroom and I came out of the stall and she was standing there. It's so funny because when you think about it and you relive it, the emotions just come right back. And I remember she just looked at me and the look in her eyes were so heartfelt and concerned. And so we just hugged in the bathroom. And she said, you know, you're going to be okay. We're going to get you through this. You're going to be fine. I was like, I know I'm going to be fine. And then, you know, I said, I'm going to go home though. I'm going to leave for the day. She's like, that's fine. You can go home. So I left. And on the way home, I had to make three very difficult phone calls. Actually, two. I called my parents first and I told them. And of course, my dad is a brain cancer survivor. He had been diagnosed about 3 years before that. But he's doing great. And that's the good part of that story. but it was hard when you tell your parents something and you hear their fear and you hear them, you know, I was reassuring them. I was fine on the phone call. It wasn't until after I hung up the call that the floodgates opened. Yeah. But you know, I was like, listen, I was like, oh no, it's fine. You know, listen, it's estrogen responsive. I can, you know, there's specific drugs for it. You know, we're going to start with chemo. They're going to do some scans for us. We're good. You know, I was reassuring them. And then I had to call my two, I am the youngest of three. I have two older brothers who live on the other side of the country. They live in Northern Idaho. And I called both of them and I told them the news. And that was probably the hardest because it was their little sister and they felt so helpless and I could hear it in their voices and they were so worried and it was hard. Those were the hard things when you hear people that you envision, you know, in your head as your strong people or the people that you butt heads with, or, you know, my brother Randy and I were totally opposite sides of the political spectrum and we're always yelling at each other. And but right. Those are those moments that you realize what's important in life and how much you care about those people in your life. And so it was a really emotional moment telling them. And then of course I had to tell my husband, which was difficult because I had to call him on the phone as well because he happened to be in New Orleans with his dad who was on hospice care because he was dying of cancer. Gosh. So I had to call him and, I remember telling him, I have, you know, it's cancer, Ty. And and I heard his dad in the background and his dad said, is it cancer? And, Ty must have nodded his head yes. Cause I heard his dad say, shit. Sorry. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, but he said,
100%.
And
100%. You're okay. Good.
So that's the last word I ever heard from my father-in-law. Aww. And so I told him that. And then the next day was my son's 8th birthday. And so I just pretended like I didn't know anything. And I tried to suck it up. And I threw a big birthday for him. And nobody knew what was going on with me at the time. And then I had to realize then this is where Barbells for Boobs comes in. I was supposed to be competing in Wadapalooza. My team, we had qualified for the RX team division for Wadapalooza this year. And we were supposed to be leaving the next week to go down to Miami. And my instinct, my first was, well, I can't do that now. And then that lasted for about 10 seconds. And I went, well, wait a second. I was like, I worked really hard for this. And they're not doing scans until the following week. You know, we already had everything. And I said, I'm just a sitting duck. Well, and I'm still the same person I was 2 minutes ago before I knew I had cancer. Mm-hmm. So I said no. And I think the other thing was I called my teammates and of course they were like, screw CrossFit, Robin, let's go have donuts and forget about it. We're here for you, you know? And I was like, I appreciate that.
I love how donuts are always like the answer.
I think one said donuts, one said cake, but I said, I said, you know what, guys? I said, I need this, actually. I said, I want to go there because I want to remind myself how strong I am. I need to go there and tell this, prove to myself that I can get through anything because I know I'm going to be looking at some really tough, physically demanding days ahead of me. And I just need this. I need this to remind myself mm-hmm. that I got this.
And how old were you, Robin, when you were diagnosed?
38. I was 38. Ooh. And so, yeah, my two teammates, they were like early 20s. But anyway, they didn't have masters for 35 at that time. Masters didn't start for 40 until or for 35 until I turned 40. So I was way off the boat on that one. But so I went down there. And this was the other difficult part was that my while I was in Miami, before our last event on the third day, I got a call from my husband that my father-in-law passed. And God, I remember hearing that and thinking, oh my God, you know, and I remember like just how hard it hit me. And then, you know, and it kind of, it carried me through a little bit. And then when I got home from Wodapalooza was when I had to tell my children. And that was the last really difficult piece was telling them because we decided to wait a couple weeks after. So I'd already had scans and we'd been going through things. I wanted to have more answers. But we had to let them know before chemo started. And they were 4 and 8. And I remember sitting with them on the couch and I had picked up this stuff from the social worker that was like these little care packages for them that had these little teddy bears and things like that. And so I said, hey guys, I said, so, you know, mommy's going to be, you know, going through having to go to the hospital for some things coming up soon. Cause, you know, they found something that the doctors need to take care of. And they were like, well, what'd they find? What do you mean? And I said, well, it turns out that, I have cancer. And I said, but because immediately they were like, wait a second. Cause they knew that Papa G had died of cancer. And I said, but it's not the same cancer that Papa G had. And I said, and you know, cancer doesn't always mean you're going to die. Cancer can, you know, a lot of people, I said, you guys know I treat people with cancer all the time. And the truth is most of the time people live. So I've got a good, you know, I was trying to like make it really positive for them. And I remember them asking me, well, where's the cancer? And I said, okay, well, here's the crazy part. And I sort of leaned over and I was like, it's in my, I said, it's in my boobie. And they were like, what? And they started laughing and they thought it was hilarious. Like, oh my God, it's in your boobie. You know, I was like, I know. And then my son, who was 8, he just stopped dead in the tracks and he goes, wait, is it breast cancer? And I said, yeah, it's breast cancer, Blake. And he goes, you mean like when the football players wear pink? And I said, yeah, that's wow. That's breast cancer. And he goes, so they're wearing that for you? And I was like, well, I guess they are now.
I guess so.
So then I got cool points. It was a cool cancer for him. And he was really, he goes, can I get some of those pink socks? And I was like, yeah, buddy, you can have all the pink socks you want.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so that was a really long answer. I don't even remember what your question originally was. but yeah, and that, and I'm sure you would, I don't know if you want me, you're supposed to ask questions, not me. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. You're so funny. So if you could just share, when you were at Wodapalooza.
Yes.
You know, coming to the Barbells for Boot, we were there, obviously. We had a booth. And we had an incredible woman named Lauren that was running our booth. So just kind of walk through that moment in your life.
Right. So when I was at Wodapalooza, I walked by the Barbells for Boobs booth. And I knew, and I actually was kind of looking out for it because I had, you know, donated to Barbells for Boobs in the past. I had you know, I'd done a couple different competitions that supported Barbells for Boobs, and never truly really knowing. I mean, I just knew that it had something to do with breast cancer and, you know, and fitness. And I was like, okay, you know. So I walked up to Lauren at the booth and introduced myself and told her, hey, you know, I just found out I have breast cancer. And, you know, I go back next week and I get scans and I'll find out more about what happens. But, you know, I just wanted to introduce myself and see if I could get some of those cool sunglasses. And but anyway, Lauren was amazing. She gave me her phone number right at that moment. She said, I'm a survivor. And she kind of shared her story. And she ended up really becoming my breast cancer mentor, if you will. She was somebody that throughout the entire thing, you know, when I had a breakdown, I would text her or call her. And she made me feel better about things. She made me realize that I'm not the first person to go through this. I'm not going to be the last person, but it does. It doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. And there's life after breast cancer. And, you know, it was so reassuring because and then I got connected to other survivors through Barbells for Boobs. And, you know, without that, when I did my own research and I was, you know, social workers were referencing me to, you know, support groups and things, what I found was that most of them were, you know, age 60 and up. None of them supported what I did, you know, when I told them, oh yeah, I want to lift weights. They're like, oh no, you can't lift weights after that and after this. And I was like, well, of course, you know, of course I can. And so Barbells for Boobs was my outlet and what I leaned on when I went through things to help keep reminding myself that I'm going to get over this. And there's still fitness after cancer and there's still, you know, life after cancer and not just, you know, modified life, but life and maybe even better life. And that's what I kept holding on to. And that's what I think having the growing support of this, you know, growing community is so good about it. It's such a positive community as opposed to some of the, you know, quote unquote support groups I went to that I tested out prior to that. Honestly, it felt sometimes like I felt very depressed leaving them. It was a lot of complaining, a lot of what people can't do anymore. And it wasn't helpful. I didn't want to know what people can't do. I want to know who beat the odds. I want to know who people said, you know what, forget you. I'm still going to lift that much weight over my head because I can do this. And I know, and it's not all about lifting a barbell, but it's more of just, that was part of my lifestyle. And I wanted to still have the things that made me happy.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a mindset, right? And so being surrounded, just like, even like CrossFit, when you meet somebody and you're like, oh, you CrossFit. So like, I kind of understand who you are, what kind of person you are, that you're okay getting uncomfortable. You're okay with a challenge. You're okay of, you know, trying something new. Right. And so it's that mindset, because I constantly hear this, that our support group, that our programs, the women in our program, our community is just so different than any other breast cancer charity or organization or support group out there. And I think that it is just this common mindset that you all have, that you want to be better and that's your focus, and nobody's, and I, you know, every once in a while, cause we are so positive, and I appreciate when a woman is like, hey, not such a bright spot Friday for me today. You know, and I'm like, okay, let's talk. And there's still a little bit of venting, but it is in a way different capacity than, I, because I've sat in on other support groups and it's so different. And I'm like, I don't know. We just attract positive, the same mindset woman, you know, and that's, I think that's what we cultivate and that's what we try to steer in, that we constantly, everything that we are doing at Barbells for Boobs, we try to stay with that mindset, right?
Well, I think that's a really good thing to note too, because like you said, you know, it isn't always, you know, sunshine and rainbows and unicorns, you know, I mean, it sucks. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's so much about cancer and the treatment and the emotional roller coaster and everything that goes along with it that is bad. And, you know, and I got to a point where I shared my story as I went along. I would, you know, was very open on Facebook. I let everybody know right from the beginning, which I also think was a really good decision for me, because it helped me not feel alone. And I had random people reaching out to me all the time. But what I also found was that a lot of people started looking at me as the, you know, positive person. And, you know, you're so inspirational. You're so positive, which was great. But then on the days that I wasn't feeling that, I had my Barbells for Boobs survivors, thrivers that I could lean on and they would understand and allow me to be human and go, you know what, guys, I'm having a tough time. I'm really struggling mm-hmm. in life right now. And here's what's going on, you know, and I would have people go, oh man, I get it. I felt that way last week. And it's okay. And you're not judged because they do get it. It's like being around people that understand is so therapeutically beneficial.
No, 100%.
You know, yeah. And it was good. And it allowed me a chance to be maybe not so positive for a moment. You know, in a very safe environment. And that has been helpful as well.
Wow. How long was your total treatment?
So I started, my treatment started basically the whole year of 2016. I was in treatment and then halfway through 2017, because I was called triple positive. So I was estrogen, progesterone positive. I was HER2 new positive, which is another hormone receptor. But because of that, I had to take something called Herceptin, which is an infusion, an antibody infusion that you do every 3 weeks for 18 sessions. So I had a port in my, inserted into my chest that I had to go in for infusion treatments for, it lasted a little over a year because, 18 times three, whatever, however many weeks that is. Mm-hmm. And then the first six of those also included chemotherapy, with, two chemo drugs. And I also made the decision, and this was something Lauren Casamley, influenced me on as well. I tried to save my hair and I was able to, it did thin out quite a bit, but I went through the chemo cold caps and I froze my scalp during mm-hmm. all sessions, which was, boy, that was miserable. But, I did it because
I've heard it's so extensive. I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I would have done it.
Yeah. It's not covered at all. It was one of those things. And I was kind of going back and forth, 'cause for me personally, I was like, you know what? I think I'll be okay. But when I sat there and told my 8-year-old son that I may lose my hair, he lost it. He couldn't picture his mommy like that. And it broke my heart. And I thought, okay, maybe there's something I can do, because I wanted to look normal for my children as much as possible, because they'd already seen their pappy lose their hair. They'd seen Papa G lose their hair. And I didn't want to look. And it's so funny, you know, people would tell me too, when I'd go in for blood draws, they're like, you don't look like a cancer patient. And it sort of made me laugh, like, okay, thanks. Like, I don't know what that means. But so you're saying I don't look like I'm sick and dying. Okay, good. Thank you. And you look nice today as well.
compliment?
I know. But, you know, I also felt like, why does that have to be what a cancer patient looks like? I feel like we need to redefine what, you know, why mm-hmm. is there a look that a cancer patient has? You know, why can't a cancer patient look healthy? Why can't a cancer patient be, you know, lifting weights? Why can't, you know, why do they have to have a look at all? You know, and the truth is, many of them don't. They're, you don't know who he's walking around. Like, think about, gosh, what's Chadwick? Nobody knew. And he was going through cancer. He didn't look like a cancer patient, did he? And no. I think that is, you know, some people need to have that normalcy in their life and need to look in the mirror and not be reminded if they don't have to be. And for me, it was helpful to try to keep things as normal as possible me and for my kids, you know?
Know that was the hardest part of my sister's diagnosis, was when she lost her hair.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, this isn't a secret anymore. Yeah. Like, it was her secret. It was her privacy. Yeah. And it just sucked walking down the street with her and knowing that for her, everyone's looking at me like I'm sick, you know, that I'm not well. That was hard for me.
I admire, you know, so many people that just rock it. They walk out and I'm like, God bless you, because I know they get stared at, and that's, you can say all you want how it doesn't bother you, but you know, you got to notice it sometimes when people are looking at you and people are, you know, because you might forget. And then all of a sudden you see the way someone looks at you and you go, oh yeah, I forgot. I got cancer going on. But you know, so I give credit to everybody that does that. And, you know, people that knew me could tell, because I still got the bald spot in the back of my head and my hair was painfully thin, but, and I did lose my eyebrows and my eyelashes. And, you know, the worst part, nobody tells you about, losing your nose hairs. Like, you know, we talk about You lose it everywhere. And I told somebody that and they're like, oh, that's great. But you know what I learned? You know what your nose hairs are good for? It's for keeping your boogers in.
Oh,
and my nose would run constantly, like just like a drain. And it was, and then I would get nosebleeds because of my low platelets. So I'd be in the middle of a workout and there's just like blood and snot pouring out my nose. I'm like, oh my God.
You're like, I'm fine. This is fine.
I am thin hair, bald spot, blood and snot coming out my nose. But you know, yeah, I look good.
You're like, time. What was my time?
Exactly. I'm like, time. Yeah. So
all of this.
Yeah. So I went through, so you asked my treatment. I did the chemotherapy for the first six. And then I did have a double mastectomy, they did a double mastectomy. I actually went up to, this was another spot that Lauren Casamali helped me with, is, the surgeons I had here, wanted to, take everything, including the nipples, and they wanted to use my lat muscle to do the reconstruction, and they wanted to take all of my lymph nodes. And I felt like it was a little drastic. And I knew, because I treat patients that have been through that, what that would mean on the other side with my function. And I wasn't happy about it, and it didn't sit well with me. And, you know, and I requested to meet with the plastic surgeon ahead of time. And I'll be honest, I went in there, and when I left there, I bawled. And I remember looking at my husband going, I don't want that to be me. And he, you know, cause he showed me all these pictures that, and again, I don't mean to sound vain, but I looked at it and I remember thinking, I've worked so hard to feel good about my body, and now cancer is just going to take that away, and I'm not going to feel like that. And it scared me. But it wasn't even so much the look. It was more like the fact that he wanted to use my lat muscles, which meant, okay, I'm not going to be able to do pull-ups. I'm not going to be able, you know, it was a huge deal. And so I went up to, for a second consult, I did my research and I found, I talked to Lauren and I went and saw her surgeon at Emory. And I ended up deciding to transfer my care up there for the surgical process. And it was interesting because when I originally consulted, they said, you know, we're going to take everything, including your nipples. And, you know, at first I was like, it's funny to talk about this because, you know, you kind of think nipples, okay, whatever, just nipples, no big deal. But again, I was the itty bitty titty committee. And the only thing I had going for me was my nipples.
Was your nipples. You're like, okay, well.
So I remember asking them, do you have to take the nipples? And she said, yes, because you have a tumor on both sides of the breast. So because you have to take everything in between. And I just took it for her word. And I said, okay. And then I went, when I consulted with this other guy who happened to have pioneered the nipple sparing procedure, I asked him, do you have to take my nipples? And he goes, oh no, I don't see why we would have to do that. And he looked at my, and I said, but, and I told him what the other surgeon said. And he goes, oh no. That's only if it's the same tumor that talks to each other. He said, you have two totally separate tumors with clear. He's like, we can to get all of it out, you know? So anyway, he allowed me to be able to, not only have function, cause he didn't use my lats, but he didn't take all my lymph nodes because I told him, listen, if I don't have to deal with lymphedema, I don't want to, but I'm not, but if you feel I need to do that to save my life, then so be it. And he said, no, we did a process where they would systematically, inject dye and determine where the cancer had gone and make sure they took anything that had gone and preserve anything else that was left. And, you know, it's funny because I still developed lymphedema. However, thank God they didn't take all of my lymph nodes because I was able to treat it completely. And now it's not even there at all anymore. And it turns out I just have a very highly active lymphatic system. So, I was able to get my surgeries through him, which is a little bit of a pain because that cost more money. That added up to more bills because I had to stay in hotel rooms in Atlanta every time and another plane ticket to go up for my surgical care and follow up. And, but it was worth it because again, it didn't sit well with me. And that's one of my advice to other people now is, you know, listen to your gut. If something doesn't sit well with you, the doctor's job is to give you advice, but it's your job to decide yes or no. And you can look there. You can get other consults. You know, they don't get to tell you what you have to do with your body. They give you their expertise and it's smart.
Yeah, that's what I'm taking from this is don't be afraid to get a second opinion, right? Like that first opinion isn't the end or is right. is all that's out there, right? And so that second yep. opinion, if, or third or fourth, or until you're comfortable, right? Until that gut yep. is like, yep, this is it.
And the final part of my, sorry, real quick, but the final part of my treatment was radiation. I did have to have 30 rounds of radiation. I was really bummed about that as well because I didn't want to go through radiation. I wasn't going to if I didn't have to, but they did find more cancer when they did the surgery. And so I was left having to do that. And that honestly was, a lot of people talk about how radiation wasn't as big of a deal, but for me, I had the worst time with radiation than I did with even chemo. It was, it burned me to a crisp and it caused so much pain, and it got to a point where I couldn't even do yoga during radiation because my skin yeah. would tear. It was awful. So that for me was the hardest part, but now here I am.
Wow. So what would you say is your biggest lesson from breast cancer?
God, I know I saw that and I was trying to think, what is my biggest lesson? I think there were several lessons learned along the way. I think one of them is, like we just talked about, being your own advocate, for healthcare, not being afraid to, I can't tell you how many people I say, oh, well, I don't want to offend the doctor or I don't want to upset them. And I'm like, wait a second, it's not their body. It's not, and if they get offended, that should be a big red flag that's not the doctor for you. They should be there for what is best for you, not what works for them.
Yes.
So that was one big lesson. I think I also learned that, even more so, as a physical therapist, I've always told people how important exercise and fitness is, but I've learned, firsthand just how important it was and how, I did the CrossFit Open through chemo and I was really proud of myself for doing that. But I think one of the reasons I did so well in chemo was because of, how fit I was going into it. Mm-hmm. And it really helped me. And I forced myself not to let that dark depression set in for too long. And I would walk, and get sunlight. But I also think one of the biggest lessons is I used to think that strength was all about, not showing emotion and, fierce competition and, the weight on the barbell and, that's what strength was to me. And after going through what I went through, I realized strength is, being real. It's allowing yourself to be vulnerable, and not being afraid of what other people are going to think. Just being human and unapologetically you. To me, that is what strength is. And that was a big lesson that I learned in going through cancer and the treatments.
Wow. Those are some heavy life lessons. Wow. Well, Robin, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story and taking the time to catch up with us.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I said anything inappropriate. I tend to do that sometimes.
You're not inappropriate at all. Well, here at Barbells for Boobs, we're just so, I'm so happy that you're part of our community, that you found us and that we found you. So it's awesome to like spread that message of be your own advocate, be your unapologetically yourself. Those are strong messages for today.
Yeah. And I want to thank you, Z, and this community. It truly has been a huge part of taking me through this journey and beyond. And I'm so grateful, so extremely grateful for you and what you do and this entire community. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of this family.
Oh, thank you. It's so funny how you're building because this community helped me with my, with the loss of my sister, and you don't realize what you're building is how it's helping you, it's
right.
This community, it means everything to me. And so we actually doing an activity today and we asked for one word to describe Barbells for Boobs, and mine was FOMO, that I have a fear of missing out on anything, So it's like, I'm always on my Facebook. I'm always checking the community. I'm always like, I only follow my community on social media because I don't really care about anything else.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I know I'm so busy in my life that I don't have a chance to, you know, I'm not on the page all the time, and I don't do all the, you know, radwads and the things, you know, where people are getting together and stuff. And so I do sometimes feel like I'm missing out on things, but what I do, what I do is I just get in there every now and then, and I'm like, hey guys, I'm still here. just so everybody know. And I try it. I feel like one of the things that has helped me and made me feel better is I feel like my role now has transitioned more into that of a mentor. And so, like, for example, when any of the girls are struggling with lymphedema or things like that, I try to reach out to them and say, how can I help you? Let's talk about it, because that is where my expertise is. And so if I can give back to them in that way, or just help, you know, like what people did for me, that's what I try to do now.
Well, it's like paying it forward, right? And it's crazy, because we see this cycle. You see, you know, I would say 20% of our community, they're still in treatment. And so that's usually who we're supporting the most. And you can even see that happening in the support group, where the women that are the most active are the ones still in treatment, and it's still such a fresh wound, right? And so, you know, it's all of us showing up for them. And again, you guys have been there. You know what that feels like. And that's why the community is just so important for women.
Oh, definitely.
So,
definitely.
Well, thank you again.
Yes.
That is a wrap. And remember, everyone, yay, you did it. You made it through your first. Remember, everyone out there, advocate, advocate, advocate. I don't care what it is. The first opinion is, that's what it is. It's an opinion. It's someone's opinion. Advocate for your health. Advocate for your life. So,
yes,
that's a wrap here at Barbells for Boobs. Thank you, Robin, again for joining us. Thanks for the team here at Barbells for Boobs for joining us and making this podcast happen. And that is Lights Out.